Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
The Woodlife, a not-so-helpful how-to guide on surviving cricket, life, and everything in between. As an England and Durham cricketer who was born, raised, and refined in Ashington, Northumberland, life has been quite unique for Mark Wood. Over the course of his career so far, he's just done a few things like winning an Ashes in a World Cup, and at the time of writing, this was going on 7 years and counting. Delighted to be joining me live from a very luxurious hotel somewhere in Pakistan, because he's on tour, he's over there at the moment, is Mark Wood. Mark, good morning, well, good afternoon from us, good evening to you.
Yes, good evening. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, my friend. And yourself, how's it going out there? It's been an eventful couple of days.
It has. We've just started the second test. So this has been day one of the second test, Pakistan versus England. Here, like you said, in Multan. So been a pretty evenly matched day. I think if we can have another good day tomorrow, then we can, you know, put our front foot forward. It was a fantastic first game. Of course, we're winning 1-0 so far when this goes out. So we've got to keep that up, haven't we?
What's it like being back over there? Because obviously England hasn't been over there for Test match cricket for some time because of, we'll call it this, that and the other. So, You know, what's it like, the reaction from, you know, the fans, the public? Because it's cricket mad over there, isn't it?
It is. You know, it's almost like, you know, you feel the passion from the fans straight away. Cricket, and I mean, if you go to sort of Brazil and you think of football here, cricket's a sort of the same over in this part of the world. It's, at times, it's people's lives, you know. I would say that we came here on a one-day trip just before the World Cup, and we couldn't have been treated any better. The hospitality was amazing. The people just want to help. They love the cricket. They love the fact that England are here. And it's been very much the same this time. People can't do enough for you. And they're just, it's just amazing, really, to see the spirit and the people in the crowds. And actually, in the last game, we played so well that in the end, they were cheering for us, which was amazing. I mean, where else in the world would that happen? But great that they love that cricket so much.
Yeah, but they're appreciating. It's like if you're watching, so, you know, somebody in your opposing football team and they nutmeg your sort of six of your players and score a goal, you're going to applaud them because it's brilliant showmanship. I also, it's been quite swashbuckling with England. And we're not going to have a complete sports interview, but I was driving back to my place last night and I was catching, it was late night, so I was catching I think it was the World Service, the BBC, and they were talking about your style of play at the moment, the whole team, and they were saying that basically the way that you're playing at the moment, even the commentators say, we don't really care if England lose the rest of the season. The rest of the series, they're just happy to see this style of cricket back again.
Yeah, it's very attacking. It's very we don't do draws. So like obviously in cricket, you can have a win, loss, and a draw in a test match. But this brand of cricket, there'll be very, very little draws. The way that we're going about it is we want to take the positive option, the aggressive approach, and you know it's easy to say that, and a lot of, you know, teams do that, but honestly, this team lives by that. So the first game on a pretty docile wicket where not much was happening, we managed to pull out the bag just by our aggressive nature with the bat. And we sort of played more what people would probably associate as 2020 cricket. We smashing the ball all parts, and we managed to get the wickets as well. So, I mean, it's pretty exciting test cricket at times. If you don't watch, can be, you know, dull and people might not feel like they're really into it. 2020 is a bit more, you know, crash, bang, wallop and exciting. But honestly, this brand of Test Match cricket is really exciting. And obviously it lasts over 5 days. But at the end, there's always tends to be a result one way or the other.
So that's, yeah, I mean, that's, and I love the slow build of cricket of a 5 day, because it's got that, it's got a certain pace to it that you know, 2020 is like, bam, crash, wallop, here we go. But it's the slow build. I mean, my childhood, probably as yours was remembers those long summer afternoons, and you're listening to the Windies at the Oval or something like that.
Yeah. And it tests, I mean, Test cricket, it's called a test because it tests you as much as it can. Obviously, it's over a long period of time. Your skills has got to, you've got to come back time and time again over 5 days, and you've really earned your victory by the end of the game. I mean, to win the last game on the last, literally before the light was going to close out, and we managed to just get over the line, and that's what, you know, as a team, when you look back with each other, you really respect the hard work that everyone's been put in. And no matter if you've had a good game or a bad game, you've been through it all together, and that's what makes the win so sweet.
And you come out of one of those cricketing heartlands that might surprise some people, Northeast, and people think, well, you think cricket, and you know, if you ask somebody who wasn't English or wasn't British, they think cricket is all sort of home counties and leafy church squares and the whole thing. But you're from the you know, cricketing powerhouse of the Northeast.
Yep, coal mining town. I haven't got a double barrel name either. So it's just, Ashington is the town I'm from. Stephen Harmison, another famous cricketer. I believe Michael Oliver, the current World Cup referee, he's from there. Bobby and Jackie Charlton, two massive names in football. So we've done pretty well for a small mining town in the northeast of England. I don't know if it's something to put in the water, but it's great that, you know, we can, you know, boast that we've got some international sportsmen from there. And yeah, we're flying the flag, I guess, for the working class people. I mean, we grew up at the local cricket club was a community club at the end of my street. And it's sort of like, I guess, the heart in the middle of the town, the heartbeat of the town, and people go there for a drink and to get together with the community. And that's what shines through there.
When did you sort of realise that you were actually quite good at this bowl, this cricket thing? When did it actually strike you? When people say, you know, that wood kid in the corner is quite good. Did you actually think that? You
know, in the corner?
Yeah. You know, look, quietly bashful in the corner. You know how you are, Mark.
I reckon, well, I was a bit of a late developer. So it wasn't, you know, like this moment where all of a sudden I was this cricketer that was going to make it. I actually, someone like Stephen Harmison, who I've just mentioned, he had natural ability. He was tall, he could bowl fast at a young age. Whereas myself, I sort of took a little bit longer to develop, and I was more of a batsman as a kid. And honestly, I loved playing all sports. So in the winter, I would play football, and in the summer, I would play cricket. But, you know, I would try my hand at tennis, badminton, you know, I'm not built for it, but I love rugby and that as well. So any sport that I could get my hand on, I think that's what actually helped me become athletic and probably helped me later in my career. But yeah, started off then. It wasn't until probably maybe 1920 on the Durham Academy where I thought, oh, I could maybe have a career here. But never did I think I'd, you know, ever reach the heights of England. I still remember watching Stephen Harmison, in the local cricket club. And
Harmy, yeah, as you call him, Harmy. Yeah, we all call him Harmy,
Yeah, name dropping, yeah. Bomb that one in there. Yeah. But he used to come up the local cricket club, and we would watch him on TV, and he'd bring up like this big bag of old stuff. Bearing in mind, I'm 5 foot 11 now, but as a kid, I was tiny. Harmy's 6 foot five, 6 foot six, and he would dish out the kit. And I didn't care that the trousers were as long as me. It just meant that I got a pair of England trousers, and I wore them all the time. And it's nice now that, you know, when I go back to the local cricket club, I can give the same stuff. And that's what my fond memories are.
Here's the thing, because people talk about football, for example, being divorced from the real world. Yeah, because they're on such huge salaries and the whole thing. And we don't hear an awful lot about footballers going back to the first clubs which they played at. But is that still a thing in cricket? I mean, are they still, is there still that connection from grassroots to test?
I think so. I mean, I go back to my local cricket club whenever I can. I still love Ashington Cricket Club. I'll do anything for them. I took the World Cup up there when we won the World Cup in 2019. You know, my son, who's only three, but he's up there every weekend in the summer as well. So sort of family tradition. My dad played there, my uncle played there, and I played there. Then, you know, I'm taking my son up there now. So it's nice that you can go back to where it all started, and I would hope I would never, ever forget that. And a lot of the lads that's still in the team, they still go back to their clubs. They give bats to their friends and, you know, cricket equipment to all our friends. I mean, Joe Root's friends must be, you know, loading it up with the bats that he must give away. But it's great that we can, you know, never forget where you come from. And even though you're playing for England, every dynamic's the same. Whether you play for England, your county, or in my case, Durham,
yeah,
or you know, your local side, everyone, they've got the same characters, it's the same dynamics, it's just a different, slightly different level. So it's quite the same.
But what's it like when you walk out, the first time you walked out on one of those grounds that you, you know, a Lord's, an Oval, you know, a Melbourne?
Oh, Lord's was...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Lord's was special. Like, just almost, I was like, do they know I'm here? Am I okay being here? Are you sure I should be here? I mean, you have lunch in the long room and it's like the best... I mean, there's pictures from like 1800s that are worth millions of pounds. You have about five spoons, five knives, five forks. You know, I don't know which one to grab. I'm just, you know, the purest silver going. And it's just beautiful. And Melbourne, you know, when you go into Australia, Melbourne's very much the same. It hasn't got the sort of fanciness and, I guess, upper class as Lords, but it's an iconic stadium. You realise the past history, the people that's played there. And you just very much, I mean, it's like a 90,000 seat stadium, and in cricket you don't get that very much, especially not in our country. So that's sort of spine tingling when you're there. So to be able to, you know, play for my country is literally, you know, the best thing ever. I remember in the back garden as a kid, I'd pretend to sing the national anthem, pretend to give interviews and all that kind of stuff. So it's nice that I actually get to do it now. I mean, I practice for years. So,
your media training's right up there, yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm just, you know, any opportunity you get to play for England is really special.
And the game's taking you all around the world, you know, and we talk about that laughing at the beginning about how you haven't got a double-barreled name, but when you go around the world, you mentioned that with Australia, where it's much more, it's not a posh game. Same with India, same with the West Indies, you know, wherever you go around the world, it's giving you an insight. And perhaps that, without getting too sort of Sigmund Freud on you, perhaps that gives you that sort of rare insight, because you've written this book called A Not So Helpful Guide on Surviving Cricket, Life and Everything Else in Between. So, you know, without don't take this the wrong way, but you've been around a bit and you've been able to see a few cultures and places and situations. So it does give you an insight, humorously.
Definitely. And I think, you know, I've been shocked by some places. Some places, you know, you think are beautiful. I mean, for example, here in Pakistan, by the motorway on the way to the ground, on the way in, there was just guys playing cricket on the side of the road, on a sort of mud field in sandals, and they're using, you know, a taped up tennis ball and a bit of, like, it doesn't even look like a real bat, it's just sort of like a made up bit of bark that they've pulled off a tree and a slab as the stumps. And it's amazing that you get to see stuff like that. You just think, you know, they must really love it to see stuff like that. You get to embrace different cultures. I mean, India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka, they're so different at home. The West Indies, the Caribbean, very much so the same. And then we go to Australia, where you think, oh, they'll be a bit more like us culturally and things. Everything should be fine. And you get it in the neck of them more than anybody else. So, you know, there's plenty of... I mean, as a kid, I actually went to Australia and played there. It's sort of like, I mean, what must be an amazing experience for people that at home are listening. So you go away, you do 6 months as a professional cricketer at a club side in Australia, and then you go back home to England and carry on your career. But I did like different kinds of jobs. I remember painting big murals on walls. I was clearing out gutters. I did kids' like toys, like screwing the kids' toys together and stuff. I did work at accountancy. I built a fence in Australia, having done zero, and I mean zero fencing in England.
But you're from the Northeast, a well-known nation of dry stone wallers, surely.
Exactly. But, I was always just slightly north of the Hadrian's Wall, you see. They keep the toughest lads up there to keep the Scots out, that's
right,
a thing.
Right, got you, okay.
That's why I was there. But when I was doing this fence, the woman was over the moon, and I still to this day show my friends it on Google Maps to show that I actually did do this fence. You can see it straight. I know that you don't believe me, but getting to try my hand at different stuff, I definitely, you know, helped.
Were you ready for the, and talk about Australia, it's a whole different thing, you're getting it in the neck. Were you, I mean, even at that level of school sport, the intensity that they approach their sport is quite, it's not play up and play the game. It really is full on, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, they love that sport. They're so competitive. Like, that's the first thing I'd say. Because of the lifestyle as well, I think, you know, they get outdoors, they do a lot of sport and activities. And I think what I found with the cricket was that even at club level, it was so, like, the whole weekend depended on how the club side did. In England, that can be a little bit more of a sort of social element and, you know, people just playing for fun. But in Australia, even if you're playing club cricket, they're desperate to win. You've got to win at all costs. You can be the hero one week if you do well, the villain the next week if you don't do well. And that's how much I found it. And I just think that sort of, you know, nature that they've got breeds, you know, successful players, successful cricketers, successful sportsmen, because they have this sort of never give up attitude and they're very proud and a proud country and proud of, you know, how they play. So they are our fierce rivals, but I do respect the sort of sport and ability.
So, they also, you should never meet your heroes. And obviously you grew up pretending, you know, in your back garden that you were there and you were, you know, you're slogging around with your, you know, bashing the Australians around for sixes all around or whatever, bowling them all out in the single over. So what is it actually like when if you're on the long room of Lords and something like, you know, a Gower or a Botham walks past? I mean, or even heaven forfend, a Tufnell. Were you actually able to, you know, is it, I suppose you all speak this. You've all been there. You've all done that. You're now an England player. You're kind of on the same sort of playing field as it was. I mean, it'd be honestly quite interesting to meet the people that you've only seen on the TV and idolised.
Yeah, and I think what's nice is that you all have this sort of, I guess, unspoken respect for each other because you've all got that England cap. You've all got you've all crossed that line and know what the pressures and. You know what it takes to try and be successful. Some aren't. But these people like Gower and Botham, when you see them, or even Tuffers, you're still starstruck because these are people you watch on the telly. These are people that you're like, wow, this. You know, I remember Botham and Shane Warne came up to me on my debut and were like, oh, hey, Woody, how's it going? Well, bold. And I was like, whoa, like, they know my name. How do they know me? Like, this is amazing. And just little things like that. I mean, when you get to meet them, you realize that they're just, you know, normal and they've been through the same things that you've been through, even though you can't believe that they're actually speaking to you.
And the physical aspect of the game, because people say, oh, well, it's the batsman. He's always the one who's, you know, in the biggest trouble. He's the one who puts the physical effort in. But bowling, if you look at the long-term damage you can do to yourself. I'm thinking sort of Willis and what happened to, you know, Bob and stuff like that. And it has been sort of recurring. So how do you wind down? How do you recover after a long test series?
I just try and spend as much time with my family as I can. I think that's, you know, really important. I mentioned before I've got a young son, so I'll dip into my training and keep that going, my physical stuff, but also mentally it's great to have, you know, time with my family and just chill out there. I've still got school friends that I still knock around with, so lads that I grew up with, I still see them and my parents and things like that. So very much a home bird. Once you're in Asherton, it's not easy to leave, so I like just being back there and amongst my family and friends, really.
People will say that, you know, boxers, if when they're out there, it's the loneliest sport to be in because you're out there, you're basically, everyone can see what you're doing. But bowling as well, it's a mental thing as well. I mean, we talk about the sledging, we talk about the Australians. I mean, you guys won the Ashes, for goodness sake. But it must be, if it's going right, it must be the best feeling in the world if you're up to get the hat trick. But if you're going wrong, it must be awful because there's nowhere to hide and you're suddenly surrounded by 80,000 screaming Australians or wherever you are. How do you approach that one?
I think you've got to try and, I mean, it's difficult. Don't get us wrong. I mean, when you're up against it, especially against Australia, you never want to be in that situation. But, you know, there's been plenty of times I've been up against it against Australia. I think you've got to try and, you know, have a bit of perspective. If you're stuck in your room at night and you're, you know, running over it, your energy's going to, like your battery's going to, you know, fade out and stuff. So you've just got to try as best you can to find things to keep your mind occupied. Some of the lads play golf. A lot of them play computer games in the room and bring their consoles out with them. Some we've just played, we've got a card school here, so we've just played a game of cards together.
Right.
And it's just trying whatever you can to just to just keep your mind occupied. And when you're out there in the middle, like you say, there's nowhere to hide. So it's a pressure situation, but as long as you can try and, so no matter how it goes, I mean, I struggled a little bit when I first started because I sort of cared too much. Whereas now I feel like as long as I'm given absolutely everything I've got, if it doesn't go my way, then I can live with the fact that I've tried 100%. And I could just say, look, they were the better team or the better man on the day, or I didn't execute it as well as I want, but my effort wasn't there. And I think as long as you can judge yourself on, you know, little things rather than the outcome all the time. And if you look at, you know, you might bowl well, but you might not get any wickets, and then you could be down in the dumps. But actually, if you focus on the things like, did I run in all day for my team? Did I bowl when it was hard? Or when conditions were tough, did I try and make something happen? Or could be even something as little as, did my head go towards the target? Just little things like that, and try and, you know, assess it like that. That can sort of take the load off you a little bit.
So why the book? I mean, did you have a zen-like moment and thought, I must impart this knowledge that I have learned around the world to my adoring public? How did it happen, Mark?
I was approached actually by someone that thought that it might be good to do something different rather than a sort of autobiography or a standard sort of thing like that, which mine wouldn't actually have been very good. I bowled, I got injured. That wouldn't be very, you know, great to read. So we try to do something a little bit different, something, you know, that could, you know, we could get some of the stories out and have a laugh with it, but also, you know, do it in a little bit, I guess, a quirky way with a self-help book with all these titles. It's not just about cricket. There is bits in there about, you know, how to bowl fast or how to celebrate, but there's also bits in that how to celebrate things I might have done at school or, you know, how to love. And my wife, you know, she gives us a good grilling in the book as well, which I wasn't too happy about, but it was her way of getting us back, I think. But it's been great that we've got to do this book. Vish, the writer, was excellent. He would ring us up, and what people would probably think is that, you know, you'd bang it out in all in one go or you'd sit together. But actually, because of we played in COVID times, I very rarely saw Vish and couldn't really do it face-to-face. So he would ring me after a match when we were in Australia just for 20 minutes here and there. We'd talk about something. And it wasn't just which he was very clever at. We would talk about a whole host of things, and then he would slot them into the different chapters. So it's not just we did one chapter, the next one, which I think wouldn't have read great. And that's a bit more autobiography like that, right? Next stage of your life, you did this. Next stage, you did that. He's picked little pockets out very cleverly and fitted them into the different chapters, which I think works really well.
Once you hope that people will take, what do you think people will learn? Do you think they'll learn a little bit more about you and the experiences and what it's like to be there, but also what it's like to you know, because you started off in the Northeast and there you are traveling the world, you know, at the highest level, playing at some of the most iconic venues on the globe.
Yeah, I hope. Well, just what you said, I hope that people, you know, get maybe a better understanding of me, but a better understanding of what it's like to be, you know, a cricket player for England. But also I hope they find it, you know, quite funny. There's some of the stories in there that aren't just related to cricket. There's other things. I hope that they just see it in a sporting context, and the fact that, you know, like that there's some normal stuff in there as well. And just in general, enjoy that it's something slightly different. I don't think it's a book that, or I hope it's not a book, or people don't find it a book that's just your sort of stereotypical. I think having something a little bit different and maybe reading things that I would get up to, because people obviously have a perception of cricketers are like this or sportsmen are like this. And a lot of my stuff, especially growing up in Asherton, I think you'd find it's the same as everybody else.
And final question, you mentioned the card school. So who is at the moment the most feared? Who's doing the Texas Hold'em shuffle on you all at the moment when you're doing the card sharking? Or are you sworn to secrecy?
No, not sworn to secrecy. It's not like that. I think James Anderson, he's the one to beat at the minute. He's coming up hot at the cards table. He's the one that always wants to play every night. And we've got sometimes, you know, I'm sick of him winning, so I've got to sort of say, oh, I'm sorry, Jimmy, I can't do it tonight. But he's the sort of man that's leading the way at the minute, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sure you're getting back somewhere. Listen, I know you're somewhat busy because you've got the small issue of a test in Pakistan. Thank you so much for taking the time out to join us. The book is called The Wood Life, a not-so-helpful how-to guide on surviving cricket life and everything in between. I was going to say, you know, if people want to find you, where will they find you? But obviously, it's quite easy to track you down on the web and the social media.
Yeah, so, well, I'm in Pakistan at the minute, everybody. Loving it here. Hoping for another England win.
Wonderful. The book is called The Wood Life. It's by Mark Wood. Good luck and great to speak to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Top man. Thank you.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.